So Northern Pass, I'm going to hopefully inspire you, engage you, and I'm going to challenge you. Northern Pass. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to practice this. I'll go like this. Okay. So can we go back to the one now? Northern Pass, doesn't it sound fantastic? Like Northwest Pass, we get these wonderful sort of visuals, don't we, when we see Northern Pass. Part of the game. So next slide, please, Neil. What we're going to be talking about are these things. Now, this is what we've been bedeviled with and troubled with is the fact that we have not been able to get to grips with what these towers are going to look like. We have no idea. They won't really give us detail. They don't want us to have detail. So we put something that looks like the towers out there that head into, as it route 10 into Montreal, these massive things. We superimpose one. Now, there's Lafayette. There's one of the older ones. And I noticed outside that there was a comparison of this 90 to 135-foot high towers that are heading our way compared to these usually 55 feet, about tree level, often wood. These are going to be metal, latticed, some different kinds of shape. And that's what it's going to be doing, Neil. So where did this all begin? Now, we know that it began probably 3-4 years ago in dark, cigar, smoky rooms where politicians and the utilities got together. It began with Southern Electrical needs, Massachusetts and Connecticut, and that is what this project is for Connecticut and Massachusetts, for them hopefully to get this designated a renewable source of supply to meet their portfolio, their energy portfolios. Now, each state has a portfolio requirement by 2025 to meet 25% of their needs by in-state renewables. Small hydro, solar, biomass chips, thermal. Massachusetts and Connecticut are going to find it very difficult. We're going to find it relatively easier, not easy, but easier. So it started off with these guys needing the electricity. And then in came Hydro-Québec and its need to capture the American market. Hydro-Québec is a provincially owned, it's Quebec-owned utility. It has a terrible reputation in Canada. It is arrogant. It monopolizes. It rolls over companies, absorbs them. They're connected with the Hells Angels in Montreal. They're talking recently with a Russian owner, the biggest utility there, to get into partnership to do third world dams in the and not particularly to join in with this project. But we don't know who they're going to get into bed with next. PSNH, Public Service of New Hampshire, floundering. Now, it's not a public service. It's private. It has stockholders. And PSNH has been bankrupt in 1988. It's poorly run. It has old thermal stations. They really need to get in on this, and they will help Hydro-Québec get this through. Now, the politicians and their roles, that's, I don't know, we had a politician... Mr. Martin. So I don't have to worry about the politician being here, but the politicians, where do they get their money from? You know, who's running this country? Is it the corporations or the politicians? Is it the people? Next slide. So this is the project. 180 miles of power line through New Hampshire. 180 miles. The first 40 miles, as it's proposed, is through essentially virginal country. Eminent domain will be necessary to cut the first 40 miles. And we mustn't forget that as a right-of-way, if you show the map in a minute, there will be eminent domain issues in the right-of-ways as you come all the way down through New Hampshire. Eminent domain. We'll talk about that later. 1,200 megawatts. Going to Franklin, well, the high-voltage DC line, DC because it's direct current, it's very efficient, it doesn't, it could travel fast, they don't lose energy with it, will be converted in Franklin to high-voltage AC. The towers, we mentioned 80 to 130 5 feet tall, and we don't know where they're going to be that height. They won't give us details. The cost, $1.1 billion. This is very expensive. They are dropping about $1 million a month, PSNH, essentially Hydro-Quebec, in New Hampshire at the moment, fueling this campaign of theirs to get this line through. Now, we need some permitting processes, and 3 years I put here, it could be longer now. We're pushing them back. Neil.
Oh, okay.
So the players, Hydro-Quebec, not much liked by the Canadians. Quebec, a province that I think twice has tried to secede. They want to secede from Canada. They're French-speaking. They need the money. They need to capture this American market, and they need the money to be able to more easily to secede in the future. They need to capture our market. They will capture it at lower rates in the beginning, and then as time passes, we'll raise those rates, as they're doing in Vermont now, where the contract is running out, and they're going to increase the contract by 40%. Northeast Utilities is Connecticut, who bought out PSNH. NSTAR is Massachusetts, and they're, I think, buying into 15 to 25% of the Northeast Utilities. They form almost a monopoly, and there are concerns about that. The people of New Hampshire. And essentially, they've treated us really as with scorn to this point. And interested parties are the politicians that are part of this. Next slide, please. To get this going, we need some federal decisions. The Department of Energy, for a line to cross the border, you need a presidential permit. And we've gone through 7 meetings so far where I think there have been almost 300 speakers. 300 of us for 3 minutes have made our points to the Department of Energy. We've had a huge turnouts, emotional turnouts. I think we've been effective. And the DOE has to arrange for an environmental impact statement. There were some problems initially with Norman Doe, the company that was going to do that. We had some conflicts of interest there. And we had to, Shaheen and Ayat finally managed to get them out of the picture. But this process, I'll go into a bit further on. The White Mountain National Forest, this acronym here, this line, if it follows the preferred route, the existing right-of-way will go over the Appalachian Trail, 10 miles of White Mountain National Forest. These huge structures, visually ugly. Now, the state decisions, the site site evaluation committee will make the final decision in the state. It's not going to be a federal decision. It will be the site evaluation committee. And they have never refused anything. They've never, ever refused anything. The PUC, Public Utilities Commission, will have authority over eminent domain. And down here, Governor Lynch and the state legislature, also the governor can be involved. So where did it all start? Now, this is Hudson Bay, James Bay. This is Quebec. James Bay, here, they may very well put a dike, a wall across there, and make this just one great big water supply sink. They have flooded. The Quebecois have flooded 7 million acres of their own land. 7 million acres. Just flooded it. New Hampshire is five plus million acres in total. They don't really seem to care. Next slide, please. They've displaced the Cree, Montreal, the tribal canoes, massing. They fought and they fought and they fought, and of course, in the end, they lost and they were bought off. And the Inuit, they were displaced as well. So they don't really care in Quebec, they just want the money. So what happens when you flood this massive area? Now, we say the word hydro and people think green. And I think there's you can talk about being gullibly green, it's not green. Because when you flood the vegetation, the trees, and there's this process of anaerobic fermentation, no oxygen, producing methane gas 20 plus times more toxic than carbon dioxide. Mercury is also produced, and that mercury is methylated. It's methyl mercury, so it's even worse than mercury. It can get into you. It doesn't make you irritable. It can give muscle rigidities. It can give kidney disease. And certainly the fish in these areas. Now, you might think, perhaps, you know, you do it, you flood that area, it's a one-off thing, and then the methane's, you know, stop being produced. But that's not what happens. There's drawdown. There's drawdown of the floodwaters. As they let the waters out, land is re-exposed again, foliage sprouts again, and the process keeps going on. So it's not green, it's brown. Now, the proposed route in New Hampshire, deliberate obfuscation, and I quite like that word because it means confusion, and in the middle of it is F-U. Obscure. I thought you'd like that, Neil. Obscure details. Now, Bristol, I don't know how many people from Bristol are here tonight, but what happened was, and it comes a little bit later, you can't get any details from them. There's, I can't remember the sort of the faceless minions that came, but, you know, you would ask them a question, and they would be, it would be very difficult to pin them down, and they would say, I will get back to you. And, of course, they never got back to you. Part of their game. Next slide, please. So here is the Northern Pass. Now, when I first saw this map, you in Bristol had your meeting with the selectmen last week, and we had heard, somebody heard that these were occurring. They'd already been working at them for 2 years. And when I got to the first meeting in Franconia, New Hampshire, they had the projector up here. So this was the size of a postage stamp. I had to take it and put it back there because, I mean, you know, this is how they've been treating us. Now, this is the map. There are like 50 different routes. Pittsburgh coming through the first 40 miles and then down. This is the preferred route, the existing right-of-way as it stands, coming down I-93. Alternate routes. And, you know, they're thinking about coming through here now. They've got 50-odd different routes. Now, they don't want us. They don't want us to be able to focus on any one route because then all our energy will go on that. So they keep on changing. They took the alternate routes out. They thought that those people on the alternate routes would go. They haven't. We're sticking together. This is a regional initiative. This is not just one town. It's just not New Hampton and not Bristol. This is New Hampshire. This is a New Hampshire issue. So right-of-way issues, width. You know, we think they've got from the 1940s right-of-way width of about 225 feet. Sometimes at the moment they're only 150, but they could go 225. We're still not sure how much width they need because coming down is a high-voltage DC line, and it's going to be next to a high-voltage AC line. Now, electricity loves to jump, and so they've got to have a certain distance apart. And we're not quite sure yet how far. We believe very strongly that they're going to require eminent domain down the right-of-ways at certain points. Height of the towers, we talked about that. We don't really know. Easements. The easements, a lot of them have pole height restrictions. You may have seen and read and heard about they wanted to sweeten us up with broadband. You know, but to bring broadband to the North Country and now you get prosperous. Well, they can't. Because a lot of the easements, the right-of-way easements, do not allow for anything but electrical lines. Talked about the paralleling of the lines, which I have to do. Now, the electromagnetic field augmentation, I've seen Hydro-Quebec studies, that in fact there may be a synergistic magnetic field increase with the high-voltage AC and DC lines sitting next to each other. We'll talk about the health effects later. Now, PSNH, in their easements, having bought them in the 40s, can patrol the right-of-way. So I don't know if anybody here has a right-of-way on their property. They can patrol it. But what's been happening up our way, up in the Franconia, Littleton, Easton, and I believe north of there, is that... what have I done here? Northern Pass. All the subcontractors have been coming on to the land, not identifying themselves as PSNH. You can call the police. They can be taken off for trespass, and that has occurred at least a couple of times. If there are those there with this right of way over their property, be polite, be civil, don't negotiate, call the police, have them hauled off. They're trespassing. PSNH can patrol. They can't. And at one point, they up north offered $400 to come onto your land and do sort of exploratory soil samples. Our message has been, the grassroots message is, don't accept the money. And there was another $400 for something else. I mean, it was just insulting. Just no. Herbicide use on the right of ways. If you don't want herbicides, and these might be confounders with illness, you can say no, but you have to pay for the cutback. You'll have to pay for it to be cut, not herbicidal. So, PSNH. I brought out some glossy little things with smiling faces and moose eating lilies and children gambling and... When I mean gambling... I mean having fun, skipping around. It's green. It's going to bring jobs to New Hampshire. I'm going to refute these in a minute. We'll infuse $20 million per year of new tax revenue to the state and local tax base, access to low-cost energy. But the case against it, it's a permanent physical and visual scar. And this is important for this state that we love. And people get choked up. We've seen it at various meetings going along, just beginning to talk about the beauty of New Hampshire, northern New Hampshire. This is stunningly beautiful down here. We have a very beautiful state, and we're going to scar it. It's going to come right down the middle with these big metal towers. It removes renewable business in our state. We have biomass plants. We have four biomass chip plants producing electricity. We have small hydro. We have not much solar. But if this gets made renewable, they're going to go. They won't be able to survive. And at the moment, I can tell you that the biomass plants in New Hampshire have not had their contracts renewed by PSNH. It's a dirty game. So they're going out. They're quiescent at the moment. Many jobs lost in construction. The building industry, the house building industry, has come to a breaking halt. We know with the economic climate, it's been extremely poor, but people are not building, they're not buying, they're not able to sell. And in Bristol, you've got 2.5 miles running through Bristol. The property in that area, depreciation will... Jim Dennis and Sandy Dennis, a very bright, intelligent couple up in Dalton, have worked out that in three of their properties, they have a large property, 63 to 82% price devaluation if this goes through. That is very significant. And realtors have by law to tell those that are going to buy that this line's going to pass through, and these properties are not selling. The markets, a lot of sales have been lost. This is extremely serious. We have immobilization of the real estate market. And we talked about that 7 million acres. Only save us pennies on our electricity bills. It's been worked out. It's going to save you, us, 0.97 cents a month on the electrical bill. This can all be backed up. Dartmouth, Harvard Business School, people who have been looking at... We have, as a grassroots, some very talented men and women. Now, what's this about jobs, 1,200 jobs? I mean, they just trumpet, we're going to have 1,200 jobs. Well, yes, they're going to go to the local coffee stall, have breakfast, maybe the motels. But who's going to put these things up? It's going to be specialized work crews, probably from Quebec, where they do it all the time. They're not going to train up New Hampshire workers. It's going to be specialized crews. Tax abatements. What's happening now? It's happening in my town because property values have depreciated significantly. People are putting in tax abatement forms to the selectmen. Reduce my taxes. My place isn't worth nearly so much as it was. And eminent domain. Now, I've just got... I'm in the weeds too much there, Neil.
No, you're
okay. No part of a person's property shall be taken by eminent domain if the taking of it is for the purpose of private development or other private use. That's Article 12A, 2006, 85% of the state voted for that. We have had Bill 648, you may know about, essentially come to a halt. It's not been ruled unable to legislate, but it's going to committee, and it won't be voted on again until January. And these are the eminent domain issues. I could go into great depth about this, but that may come with questions. Incidentally, the lobbyists, you know, the lobbyists are probably running the whole show. You know, they're the corporations, they have their lobbyists, 5,000 to 10,000. Just out of interest for you, we didn't do this, but we could have done. You can become a citizen lobbyist for $50 in this state, and you get the little orange badge. We almost did it. Maybe we should have done, but we didn't. They're targeting us. They don't think we've got any fight in us. No benefit to NH. We export electricity. We export. We have enough electricity in the state. We export it. Next slide. So how do these guys... I know, get next one, please. So they flow below the radar, and suddenly they cracked in on us. They spoke to their friends. Gary Long has a good friend in Governor Lynch, the owner of the union leader. They spoke to them. They got to these local media early, and they kept a high-level message consistently. You know, if you look at their TV ads now, I mean, really, you know, it looks wonderful. I mean, they're just beautifully made. They're very sophisticated. They're visually extremely attractive. So they targeted the brokers and stakeholders, the politicians. And they constantly reevaluate. And as we're coming up against us, we can see them reevaluating their strategy, sidestepping and doing something else. And they would take the alternate routes out, quieten them down there, move this way. Next slide. So, now, yeah. Unlike Neil, I'm not politically correct. And I hope I do not offend anybody, but I've got Shaheen here and Bass there. Now, if you follow all the money, Constellation, all these utility energy companies are coming into Shaheen. But to be fair, they're also going to Bass. When, what's his name? Chuck Henderson, who's the aide-de-camp, the aide-de-camp for Shaheen.
Liaison
for Shaheen, was asked about this. He said, well, it's just chump change. 3,500 from Exxon Corporation to Shaheen, just chump change. As a physician, just out of interest, believe it or not, I think you will believe this, when drug reps come and they give me a rep, when the reps give me a pen that says Nexium on it or Lipitor, they've shown that physicians are very, very grateful. And we write that down. The studies show that. Just a silly little pen. Isn't it pathetic? Well, chump change, you know, when you add it all up, quite an effect. So, the moment of realization, boom, emails started flying. Well, it wasn't the Arab Spring, it was, I mean, suddenly, they're coming to town. And we were scrambling. We were clearly concerned, we'd gone through the concerns, and we developed a grassroots initiative. And basically, people just up and down the line emailed, text. I'm not great there, I telephoned. There were people who were visiting. We all suddenly started to get together. But with the internet was what was allowing us to communicate extremely efficiently. Next. So we organized, and what's interesting is how do you organize a grassroots? It's something that emanates from the local communities. It spontaneously arises. And do you have a very strict bureaucratic structure? Do you do like an incident command structure like you do with Homeland Security, or do you tend to be looser? And what happened was, to this point, we've developed leaders up and down and emailing in regional sections. And I think we've done a pretty good job so far. So our communication has been meetings. We formed a coalition. We have websites, and those that if you go outside the websites and there's little orange stickers for the Atta girls, get onto those websites, because Live Free or Fry is up north, much up north. That's where eminent domain will cause significant, serious problems. Barry Northern Pass is more the middle section. We've got the Atta girls who are doing wonderful things. They Northern Trespass, if you want to go on YouTube and see Northern Trespass for cartoons. They're wonderful. Because, you know, we need this. We were at one Department of Energy meeting, and we were fighting hard. This has been a fight. And suddenly, we noticed this young woman get up to the microphone, and she was carrying a guitar, Katie Rose. And she sang this wonderful song, the lyrics totally appropriate. And boy, did we need that. There are now four songs. Maybe there's more now. And the color, you know, this orange color, Julie Moran in Woodstock, I think it was, came down all the way from Colebrook and said, this is what I'm coming in. There we got the color. And this color has united us. And this is what inspires us. We have to have humor, and we have to keep on. We must not. They expect us to get tired and essentially just go away. But we're not going to do that. Next slide, please. Our mission up north, essentially no build. We were talking about burying it, and they've said that they can't do it. We've proven financially that they can, because of massive amounts of money in this. They could bury it, but this is the granite state. It's granite they're going through. They're saying they can't do it, and they want to look at their lines. There's already an existing line in Vermont, and there's also one in Maine. They won't go over there because PSNH doesn't own that line. There are regulatory processes there they don't want to go through. We may push them to it. This is not over yet. Mitigation, you can see I don't like that. Next slide. So the game, initial town meetings, where you, Bristol, you weren't allowed to ask questions, were you? We did. And it got a little wordy at times. The selectman was supposed to ask them questions. It depends on your selectman. Sometimes the selectmen are just not going to ask questions. You have to. We did. We were then, you know, so we were behind the eight ball a bit. We were really running hard to catch up. Intervening petitions. We got a lot through, but we had a time constraint. We really had to work hard. Intervening petitions against this. AMC, the Conservation Trust, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. Major intervening petitions are in there. Scoping notes. Then we had the Department of Energy. We had to talk and get our things over, points over. Again, a rush. Bad microphones. I think I put that up there. Bad maps. They postponed hearings. The 648 last week was postponed, I think, from a Wednesday to a Thursday. So when you've got 300 people coming down from the state, they know it. We'll postpone it until tomorrow. Now, this is a working day. This is a work week. People are taking time off, and now they've got to take it the next day off. That's how they're playing the game. They're very smart. Next. Okay. Profit imperative. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the fact that they don't care. Any big corporation, this is In the Absence of the Sacred by Jay Mander, they don't care about environmental preservation or even national security. I'll talk about that in a minute. The growth imperative, they have to sustain growth. And amorality, they don't care. They don't care if one child gets leukemia. They don't care. So the House bills, I thought Deb Reynolds was going to be here tonight. I won't go into great detail, but HB 302 was to make this power renewable. 648 is the eminent domain. 649 is to have a study, and this one's to get rid of an energy initiative, a regional greenhouse gas initiative. But next line. No, I just wanted to have this up. Look at this guy. Anybody know him?
Yeah.
Tom Thompson, son of one of our previous governors. Look, I mean, you know, he's just about to pounce. Who's this? Gary Long. So this is Gary Long. Look at him. Look at the faces. Is this guy real? Next slide. Now, you know, I thought that's Valerie Heras, sort of one of the leaders in the Lancaster area. Look at that. Oh, I believe you. Oh, I've had enough. Oh, I don't know. Did he say what I thought he said? Next slide. So I won't go too much into this because, again, of time constraints, but regulatory capture has really angered me. Capturing influence with staff or commission members of the regulatory agency so that preferred outcomes of the special interest are implemented. A captured regulatory agency is often worse than no regulation because it wields the authority of government. Next slide, please. This maybe says it better. When this president of the Union Pacific was asked of these agencies, is it something having a good sound but quite harmless, which will impress the popular mind with the idea that a great deal is being done when in reality very little is intended to be done? NOMADO, Department of Energy, a federal had conflicts of interest. They had worked with PSNH. Many people tried to get them removed out of it. It wasn't until Ayotte and Shaheen finally got there that we moved NOMADO out. But guess what? NOMADO's still there. They're doing some paperwork. Next slide, please. So British Petroleum, you know, the Gulf oil spill? The regulators didn't require that the valves were tested under appropriate pressures. They were partying, regulatory capture. My business, Federal Drug Administration, rife, corrupt. It's not who you think they are, I mean. World Health Organization have in the health studies on electrical magnetic fields given the studies to the utility bodies to look at them, see what they thought about it, and send them back and refer them. Corrupt. Next slide. Okay, these guys, I think, are a bit of a laugh. They're just going through there has never been a refused permit cross-border line. They've never refused one. These guys, the Site Evaluation Committee, have never refused an application. So are these regulators captured? Do we stand a chance? Public Utilities Commission, I'm not sure about them. The White Mountain National Forest is that 10 miles. We understand they have not refused. They will give some ideas. It's like the Army Corps of Engineers and wetlands and bridges. They don't stop it. They make suggestions. So, physics. We're now going to get on to health and security. Extra low frequency electromagnetic field is what we're dealing with high voltage AC and DC lines. Now, doesn't extra low frequency sound like it might be safe? It's not. Because of that very low frequency, almost 3,000 kilometers long, it's amazingly low frequency. It can enter our bodies and our children's bodies more easily than the normal frequencies. Cell phones. I think Neil just mentioned now that if you're a heavy user, that's more than 30 minutes a day for 10 years, that I can't remember the body. Oh, yeah, the International Agency for Research into Cancer believes that there's a 40% increase in gliomas, brain gliomas. These are very nasty, aggressive tumors. Now, it's an association. But we've had many of those. We've had, what did we have but smoking? Vietnam Orange. So often in the beginning, we just didn't know what was happening. We were concerned, and our worst fears were realized later on, many years later on. And so I'm going to invoke here those implications of the precautionary principle. In the absence of robust science, and we don't have it, we can't cause cancers, leukemias, breast cancers, miscarriages, Alzheimer's in animals. We can't. We'll put animals next door to those electromagnetic frequencies in those environments. We can't. So we can't say there is causation, but there's an association. And that's been found out by a massive trial in 1992, that there's a doubling of, and I've concentrated on childhood leukemia, because one child should not get leukemia from this project that's not doing us any good in any manner of ways. One child should not get leukemia. There's a doubling of the incidence of leukemia in children living within 300 feet of these lines if the electromagnetic level is 3 to 4 milligauss. And I'm going to show you in a minute where there's a school where that occurs. So the precautionary principle says that, well, look, you know, if you think it might, cite your schools away from it. In Connecticut, bury the lines. And I've got here many countries, Australia, Sweden, Spain, the UK, that have very definite distances away from schools for these lines to be. The trouble is, when you've got these visual horrors coming down, the land next to it becomes very cheap. No one wants to buy it for building regular houses. So where do your schools go? Your fire stations, your police stations. That's where they go. Security. I'm part of a Homeland Security team, and we get insights into what's happening. I would like to say, I don't know if anybody's here from Quebec, but Montreal has the highest number of radical Islamic Al-Qaeda cells in Canada. It's disproportionate. These cells are in, and I go to Montreal a lot because I like their music. But if you go up and down Route Lafayette, St. Catherine. I saw one of the taxi drivers and I said, why is it that, you know, so many people from Somalia and the Middle East are here? It's very easy to get into Canada, much easier to get into Canada than the United States. These radical cells are up there. We know they're up there. We've been told they're up there. How better to get at the United States but to get at our grid through Hydro-Quebec? And Canadian security, they will admit, the intelligence report of last year is rather than proactive, they're reactive, and their security has much to be desired. I can't remember the year that some individuals got into the Hydro-Quebec control plant. There was a bombing up there a few years ago of one of the towers, but that was Quebecois who didn't want the power to go to south, believe it or not. But we have a significant risk up there from terrorist attack, and Massachusetts and Connecticut will be blacked out for significant days, apart from the fact that ice storms, you know, there are other ways that these towers can go down. So this is the school. This is Profile School in Bethlehem. There's a line. That's 600 feet, 300 feet. I measured it. There's the outfield there, 3 to 4 milligauss, which is the danger level. Now, no one's going to be there 4 hours at least, according to the Italians. But if we put another line down there, you get synergy, augmentation of that magnetic field. And there are new lines coming down, the new transmission lines that move electricity 3 times faster with 3 times the magnetic field. We're going to exceed the danger levels. And what are we going to do to these young cells that are turning over? So let's go on about the environment. Birds, robins, you know, if you think about the AT, that migration pathway, robins coming up depend upon the magnetic fields. So do pigeons, Bicknell's thrush. Birds are affected. Animals. I would have to say I don't have too much research on information in animals. I've tasked that previous school, the children, I could talk to them to try and find out what they could about animals. The corona effect. When the winds blow in France, southern France, Yugoslavia, and the wild, and the Santa Ana's angry southern winds, you can kill your wife's lover or your husband's lover and get a reduced sentence because of the ionization of the air is recognized as disturbing us. And that occurs with these electrical lines, the corona effect, ionizing. Now, auditory, there's a bad noise comes from them. Visually, we talked about ground current can affect cattle. A lot of studies on that. And now we have the political environment. So the governor, We met him in February. He was good enough to give us audience. This is what he said. Whilst the goals of the project are worthy. Now, remember, I think if we can go back and read between the lines, he'd obviously sat down somewhere with the other governors, maybe his friends, and decided on this project. I've said many times that the Northern Pass transmission line should not go forward without the support of the people living in affected communities. Thousands of phone calls, the DOE meetings, everybody, we're finding hardly anybody saying, yes, go with this. But he's still not responding. Next slide. The president's mandate, he wants us to be self-sufficient. Do we want another OPEC up north? You know, they're going to dangle us, move the rates up and down. Do we want that? Let's produce our own energy. Let's look after our own security. We could do it a lot better. And how about conserving? Is this an opportunity for the governor to make this a green conservation state with whatever, whatever way he can construct it so that we start conserving electricity? And these are the basically, you know, so many ideas. Next slide, please. So what about you, Bristol? You have to those here. You have a voice. We can be together, and we're going to hear Peter's talk about democracy. There are ways for us to win this. We've got to show up. We just mustn't say, oh, no, it's a bad thing. We've got to show up. We've got to do it. We've got to get out there. We've got to go to the meetings. Cannon Mountain. These wonderful women, Adda girls, are doing this Cannon Mountain, August 11th or 12th, is it? Yeah. We need to be up there covering that whole hill with orange. We need to show up. We have to show up. We will not be silent. Not a free ride. As a Scotsman, I love this country. I'm American now. Because back in Scotland, I couldn't do this. My sister is in the middle of the Highlands of Scotland. Same transmission lines going down. The bureaucracy has said it's coming down. She's an activist. She's a writer. She tried to fight some tree problems at one point. They do not have what we have here, and that's the ability to show up, speak up, and get together. All that we need for evil to prevail is for good people to be silent. Who said that? Gandhi. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. Martin Luther King. Next slide. We've got to hang together. And if we don't hang together, we're going to hang alone. So thanks. I'll turn over to Peter now.